Welcome to Fantastic Females, our adventure to finding the mythical island of freedom together. I'm Kalyani.
And I'm Rupali. We are your next door finance experts sharing our experiences in the world of money and energetics. Hello, welcome back to Fantastic Females. Today we are going to discuss once again SVB and the whole banking system collapse. And the reason why Kalyani laughs is because we are re-recording because we were experimenting and we tried recording in an outdoor venue which then got overly loud. So we are re-recording and providing better content, hopefully.
Yes, actually it was a really nice setting that we got really excited with, unfortunately. Unfortunately, the sound was not something that we would like to pass as the final product. So here we are, adding to the noise around SVB in our own space by re-recording this. But hopefully, you'll enjoy this episode. So let's get into the thick of things. Before we get into SVB and understand what's happened with SVB, for those who don't know or who are totally kind of living under a rock, is Silicon Valley Bank, which was taken over by the US government on 10th of March, after 2 days, 48 hours of happenings that we'll go over. And along with that, there was the Silvergate Bank and First Republic Bank that kind of collapsed like a house of cards around the same time.
Yes. What triggered it and all of that, we'll go into in a little bit. But to maybe give you some context as someone who may not understand fully what the banking system does and in essence how it makes money, we'd just like to clarify. So what is a bank and how does the bank make money?
Yes, I think this is a great question to start with because a lot of people have a myth that if you invest, then your money is at risk, whereas if you keep it in the banks, it is safe. So banks are seen as the next step up from maybe stashing your cash under a mattress or under a tile, whatever people used to do, let's say 150, 200 years back. But we know that that's not the case.
Exactly. So banks are, I mean, don't get us wrong, banks are safe. It's just good to know what they ultimately do, right? So when you're putting your money in a fixed deposit, is the bank keeping it in a safe locker somewhere? No, because it's a business, and to be able to cover the costs and make money, it has to then invest it somewhere.
Yes. And I used to think as a young kind of teenager that banks were a very noble benefactor kind of institution that would keep my money safe. For myself, they would have armed guards at the doors and I could go and claim this money back at any time. But in effect, we know that banks pool all their deposits together. They keep only a small percentage of the deposits as liquid deposits that they can then honor at any given point. We'll go into that in a second as well. But they pool a large part of the deposited sum and they invest it in the markets on your behalf. So a lot of times people who come to Trading Mom and they've never invested themselves, they're not confident. I very often give them this example that if you don't do it, someone else will do it for you on your behalf. And what do they invest in? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so they invest in all sorts of stuff. An easy example is when you and I go to the bank and ask for a loan, for a car or for a mortgage or any type of personal finance. That's considered an investment for a bank. And there are many such assets, but I think for the purpose of this conversation, it's just a way for you to highlight and for you to understand what an asset and liability is. So an asset is the loans that the bank gives you because ultimately you owe them the money and so it's a receivable. And a liability is your money that you give the bank because it ultimately owes it back to you.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about the percentage that I just mentioned. How much do banks typically keep?
Yeah, so there are rules depending on what type of bank you are and so forth. It's about 5-ish% that they do keep in liquid cash. The rest is then staggered. So it might be, when I say liquid, it means how accessible it is. So if they've given someone a 20-year mortgage, that's considered illiquid, because you expect to receive it over time because you pay your EMIs monthly.
Exactly. So liquidity, I think we've explained before, but just to recap in brief, is how accessible the funds are. Cash, hard cash being the most liquid because you can go and spend it right away. Bank cards are pretty close substitutes as well nowadays. And then any deposits that you need to kind of do paperwork for to get out of are lesser liquid. Stock investments are a little more illiquid. And so on and so forth, with hard assets such as car, house, etc., which are much harder to sell, being probably the most illiquid in the scheme of things. So with that knowledge in mind, I would want to now start kind of talking about what has happened in the last 2 years to bring us to this point. Before we go into that, with this understanding of the percentage that the banks do keep as liquid cash, let's kind of list all the assets that they would be, ideally, they should be investing in, right? There should be enough diversification. And they would invest in stocks, they would invest in loans, properties. Recently, I've come across a few end-user properties that are invested in by banks. So people rent directly from a bank instead of a landlord. Funds, all now, sorts.
Yeah, I think the concern or the risk is not the fact that the banks invest in different types of assets or risky assets. I think the risk for the bank is the fact that today, if they have 5% cash, for example, the rest of it is all invested elsewhere. So yes, if 100% of their deposit holders, you and I, want to withdraw our money all on the same day or the same 2-3 days, that's where the risk is. And that's kind of what happened with SVB, where while it had no issues on the surface, as soon as most people tried to, or many companies tried to withdraw their money, this is what kind of caused an issue, because the bank did not have enough money to then, you know, provide that money. And so I think let's maybe go into why SVB had so many deposits and what happened over the past 2-3 years since COVID.
Yeah, I wanted to build in one last piece in the banking puzzle, just to kind of bring more clarity. So you would have noticed, as our listeners, that anytime we take a borrowing from the bank, we always pay a higher rate than what we get on our deposits. And this is how the banks make money eventually. So they are investing on our behalf in varying risk-exposed assets. And that's their strength in terms of being able to take that risk on a large scale with the large funds, sum of funds that they have. And in return, they're able to provide us a safer, lower rate of return. And the difference between, so for example, your mortgage might cost you at current rates 4.75%, whereas what you get on long-term deposits is maximum, let's say 2.53% currently. So the difference between those two is basically what goes in the bank's pocket, to understand.
And that's what we call net interest margin.
Yes. Yes, we're building towards more complex concepts now. But let's backtrack a little bit to understand how SVB ended up with so much surplus and also the trigger from 8th of March.
Yeah, so what happened over the past 2-3 years is we've mentioned, when COVID hit, the banking system, the Fed kind of really made money cheap to free, right?
So that resulted in excess cash in the system overall, but especially in the tech industry, right? We saw a big bullish sentiment around technology growth companies that includes everything from Roku, Uber, Etsy, Pinterest, all the social media companies, Amazon, Apple, Tesla, and these have become household names and have been super popular as stocks. And as these funds were made cheaper and super easy to access through loans, these companies that typically don't make revenue in the present day, they are kind of valued with the future stream of growth that is projected for them. That is, they're valued at the rate that they are seen to be growing in, let's say, 5 years' time, 10 years' time, etc. These companies stacked this cash, whether it was through loans from the banks directly or through venture capitalists, who sometimes tend to be the middlemen that take the risk of lending to these growth companies instead of the banks directly lending. These companies, including venture capitalist companies, were cash rich, and they stacked their cash over the period of 2020 and 21 with the banks that they were banking with. A key aspect to understand here is all the banks that we're talking about are pretty concentrated in a niche space. And that's not something that we've seen in the past. For anyone comparing this to 2008, this is a key difference, right?
Yeah, it's a key difference, and these are what we call regional banks with very specific types of exposures, like you mentioned. And I think the risk here is that it's too much of exposure to the same type of risk. And so that's why we harp on about diversification a little bit. But this was a natural thing that kind of took place because VC firms are, in essence, tech, you know, healthcare, because that's where all the innovation is, and that's where the new kind of technologies come up, the new R&D takes place, all of that. And so it was a kind of a natural thing, but it became a big thing when SVB's deposits, for example, tripled over the past 2 to 3 years. And so given what they were comfortable with, what they had, it tripled. And what they did is they then invested this into fixed income.
Yeah, I almost feel bad for them, but they were trying to be super safe by investing more and more of these higher deposit sums that they were getting into very safe, what's considered very safe long-term government deposits. Also, to really clarify, SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, is kind of the prime lender in the Silicon Valley tech growth company kind of space. Silvergate and First Republic banks are more concentrated on crypto establishments, which also massively grew during the pandemic time and have kind of seen a similar curve in terms of slowing down in growth in 2022. So let's talk about what happened in 2022. I think if 2020-21 were unprecedented in terms of the flush cash, 2022 has its own story about being pretty unprecedented, right?
Yeah, so what happened is 2020 and 2021, money was made cheap, interest rates were reducing. After that, there was a lot of inflation and too much inflation because people have lots of money, people are spending, people are willing to spend more than ever before. That resulted, and so the Fed decided to tighten the tap a little bit and over time reduce liquidity by increasing interest rates. And so what that resulted in is when for fixed income, such as bonds or any mortgages or the value of it actually drops as interest rates increase. That's actually something that we'll go through another time because it's quite, it's a full topic.
It's a really interesting topic as well, yeah.
Yeah.
So SVB was smart enough, safe enough, trying to be smart enough by putting 77% of these larger three times of their deposits into long-term, 30-year long U.S. treasury bonds, which are super safe as such. They will not lose you money. But like Rupali said, they drop in value when the interest rate goes up. Interest rate has gone up by 4% over the period of 1 year, which, like we were saying, is unprecedented. And it was pretty overnight the way it happened as well, right? So people who would have stacked cash in 21 would probably not have seen where 22 would have ended. And I think this is probably where the problem stems from in terms of not having that diversification. So what happened as a lead up to this March kind of collapse is that the value of SVB's assets really fell.
So in terms of the lead up and what caused the issue here, to tie the two pieces together, firstly, their deposits tripled. They invested this money into the longer term treasuries, which are risk-free, which if you hold for 30 years, you will get 100% of your money back. But if you are forced to sell it at a time that is not opportune, that's when there's potential to make losses. And so what happened with SVB is when rates went up, the assets, which are these treasuries, actually dropped in value. While they still had enough to fund it, gap narrowed in terms of how much they own and how much they owe.
Yes, and also on the reverse side, like we've said, their clientele is so focused on tech and growth companies. These tech and growth companies, if they were not earning in 2020-2021, then they were definitely not earning in 22 when a lot of this industry lost value in the stock market, at least. So they were all banking on the cash that they had stacked in their accounts, which were large sums of money that they'd got through funding, and they were withdrawing this for their operating expenses.
Yeah. So an early sign of this was the tech job losses, right? Where it showed that the tech sector is actually not doing as well and is actually struggling to kind of just
keep
exist.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with these withdrawals, regular withdrawals, and SVB's own assets losing value, that was pretty much a double whammy that led to the bank having to sell a part of its bond portfolio. And this was at a loss of $1.8 billion. It was a realized loss. Let's talk a little bit about that.
There's a difference between unrealized and realized. So unrealized is what we call paper losses.
Yes.
Because you don't feel it in the bank, in essence. So when I buy something at $100 and it drops to 90 and I hold that asset, I don't do anything with it, that's unrealized. But the moment I try and sell it at 80 and I sell it at 80, that means my $100 of cash that I put into the asset has now, in essence, become $80 of cash. That asset has now gone. So
yeah.
The moment you transact, the moment you sell, it becomes realized. And so SVB realized that loss, which means it does not have the upside of that asset anymore.
Exactly. And a lot of investors, a lot of financial institutions at this point are probably sitting on an unrealized loss, but it doesn't hit your books or accounts, or it doesn't have an impact until you actually need to sell.
Like, as long as you're not levered, right? So that's where the margin accounting comes into play.
Yes. So for any beginners, all you need to know is don't borrow to invest. Number one, play with your own cash. And number two, as we will go into more detail, is as we've learned from this fiasco, is the need to diversify. So before that, let's talk about on the 8th of March, when SVB sold their assets for a loss, a part of their assets for a loss, the CEO decided to calm the investors down by coming on an online conference. And it was a bit like shouting to calm down, you know, it had the opposite impact and it caused a lot of panic in the industry. And more people started withdrawing their funds from SVB, which led to a bank run, which essentially is basically a lot more people asking for their deposits back than the bank has facility to honor.
Yeah, and so as market panic was spreading, the regulators stepped in and they basically had to come to the rescue. They didn't want to call it a bailout. What they did is they've recategorized SVB and Signature Bank, systematically important banks. I can't remember the exact term now, but to be able to support these banks, they had to recategorize it, and it was causing some kind of contagion, and so they wanted to contain that.
Yes.
And so they recategorized it. They basically came out with many different support structures, such as insuring 100% of the deposits, because that was the fear initially. And over the weekend, these measures were then rolled out that, okay, all the deposits will be insured. Banks then have a credit line. Essentially, the Fed, the Treasury, and the FDIC, which is the fixed deposit insurance company, came together and rolled out these measures to contain this crisis.
Yes. So legally, initially, they were only required to return or reinstate or guarantee $250,000 in each account. But most of these tech companies has had way over this amount as deposits, and that was still fueling the panic around the situation. So between the 10th of March, which was Friday, and there was a bit of panic and a sell-off in the markets, to when the markets opened on Monday over the weekend, these agencies committed to reinstating the deposits to 100% level, which meant that no one lost money, and it has allayed fears. But they've done it with the commitment of not using any taxpayers' money, which we know could have a long-lasting impact. So that's the story with SVB. I think we would like to kind of focus it back on ourselves and what we've learned from it. For me, the one point learning that I've had from this is to focus even more on diversification.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And diversification is basically putting your eggs in different baskets.
Yeah.
Do not put all of them in one basket, even though someone may be telling you it's super safe, you'll get 20%, you'll get 100%, we'll triple your money. All of that kind of thing is anyways would should raise alarm bells.
Yes.
But if you do get tempted and you have some spare cash lying around that you don't mind losing, do that. But then your money, you should spread it over different products, different sectors, different types of investments, equities, fixed income. There's different ways of doing it. So contact Kalyani planning on Trading Mom, actually. Yes. She'd be able to give you the toolkit to be able to diversify your portfolio.
Yes, at least understand what options you have. And personally for me, something I never considered before, we've discussed it, is geographic diversification. So I'm looking at even fixed income options in emerging markets, especially with interest rates expected to go down over the next few years. So these are just some options that we want to open your eyes up to. And if you have any comments, any questions, then please reach out to us on our social media. Thank you very much. This was a special episode that we've released earlier than our usual date. So the next episode will be out the next Friday, following Friday. Hope you have a nice few days in between. Goodbye.
So with that, we bring this episode of Our Financial Adventure to an end. Please follow us on all social media platforms at Fantastic Females. None of the information provided is financial advice, and Fantastic Females is not a financial advisor.
The information provided is educational only. It is general in nature and does not take into account your personal circumstances.
Please use your own due diligence before making any financial or investment decisions.